The Sam Sorbo Show is brought to you in partnership by the Herzog Foundation.
Friends, we need to rethink how we define education. Pastors, we call upon you to urge parents to home educate.
You are powerful as a parent. You are the best role model for your child.
And we don't believe in lies, and we love this country.
Conservatism is anti-slavery. It's freedom.
Sam from a very talented family, by the way.
God is using you as a prophetic voice to awaken us.
One of the great spokesmen for homeschooling. She saved more kids than anybody. Let's give it up for Sam.
And welcome to the Sam Sorbo Show here on Patriot.tv. It's only my second week here, but so exciting. I've got a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to talk about a new immigration crisis, also deep fake porn. Have you heard of this yet? And the dilemma that's facing our young men. But before we get to that, my first guest is joining me to talk about the infiltration of communism in the United States. This is a problem that I see as we've been going through this for quite a while. I think we are still in the process of waking up to it. I'm hoping that my recent film, Hollywood Takeover, will do some good in that direction. But Frank Gaffney, he's the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C. That's an internationally recognized resource for timely, informed, and penetrating analyses of foreign and defense policy matters. He also is the host of Secure Freedom Radio, which is a nationally syndicated radio program, heard weeknights throughout the country, where he addresses current and emerging threats to our national security, our sovereignty, and our ways of life. Frank Gaffney, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Sam. It's a great pleasure to be with you, and so excited about both this new platform for you and this great new film.
Yes, thank you very much. So I wanted to talk to you about what's happening in Hollywood. This has been going on for a long time. We've had these discussions about the communist infiltration in our schools. In preparing to have you on, I decided to just Google your name to look up the most recent bio for you, because I know you so personally that it's like, wait, I need to introduce him to my audience. They say some very nasty things about you online.
You must be doing something
right.
Well, I'd like to say that I was canceled before canceled was a thing. I ran afoul of the Muslim Brotherhood about 20 years ago, I guess, and they and their friends in the Southern Poverty Law Center. We call this, by the way, since you wanted to talk about the Marxists and communism, the red-green axis. And this is how, you know, they're operating inside our country against us by trying to silence voices like mine and, well, like yours, for that matter, who are truth tellers, and we're not going to have it.
Right. So, and that's what we see is that they stand diametrically opposed to the truth. But where do you see this in our national security, in our government, in places where it really matters?
Well, it's hard to overstate the significance of these forces inside the United States. I'm just listening, coming over to talk with you to an interview that President Trump gave to John Solomon, I think just a few hours ago. He was talking with him about the fact that this enemy within problem is more dangerous in some ways than the ones that are outside of our country. And the ones that are outside of our country are coming here as well. Needless to say, that's a problem. But Sam, I think the biggest concern I have is it's still the case that too many of us understand it's even possible for there to be an enemy within. You know, this was one of the great successes of the Marxists, going back to Joseph Stalin's day, when Joe McCarthy, a senator, began revealing the penetration of our government by Soviet agents. And they took him out. And ever since then, the word McCarthyism is one of the great snuffers, cancelers, if you will. We do have enemies within. They abound, and they're becoming emboldened by what they see as a target a window of opportunity against us.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that got me sort of booted off of Fox News was my saying that I still needed proof that Hillary was actually pro-America. I didn't even have proof that she was pro-woman, even though that was sort of her platform, as I am woman, hear me roar. But I asked, you know, where's the proof that she's actually done something for the country, especially in light of Benghazi? And so I think that we have to recognize at this point that there are people who have infiltrated in our government. They are American citizens. They have been raised in our schools to believe that America is bad and communism is good. Am I wrong?
Well, I think that's one source of it. There are others, and I much in the news at the moment, as you know, is whether TikTok, this platform that is ubiquitously, addictively followed by our young people, should be banned or even should be considered a problem. I think it's a very serious problem indeed, because these kids, among others, are not only being addicted to this insane distraction. And you've done a lot of fabulous work on teaching kids and equipping them to deal with the real world. TikTok, as served up in this country, does not do that, Sam, as you know. But worse, it is indoctrinating them. It is subliminally in some cases, and in other cases, it is overtly telling them that the United States is a terrible place, that you should hate it, you should, well, among other things, love Hamas and try to save it. And we've seen the effect as these kids go dutifully down to their campuses or to the public square and either torch things or simply extol the virtues of people who do, like Hamas.
Right. So we have a minute left, and I want you to talk just briefly about the communist ideology that shuts down thought. Can you describe that a little bit and how that Sure. has its effects in our culture today?
I hope that I don't overrun the minute, but there's baked into the communist ideology the idea of control at every level, starting with, as you know, again, so well, the family. And the educational systems and the religious institutions. And basically you take those out or you take them over and you have a very powerful means, especially when amplified by this kind of technology I just discussed, TikTok, to indoctrinate and thereby make sure you dominate kids and in turn, eventually, if not very quickly, the society as well.
Frank Gaffney is also the lead author of War Footing, 10 Steps America Must Take to Prevail in the War for the Free World. Where can people find that?
Well, there's actually a much newer book than that called The Indictment, Prosecuting Communist China and Friends for Crimes Against China, America, and the World. You can find that wherever books are sold. The Center for Security Policy is a great resource for books like that one you mentioned, securefreedom.org. Yes.
It certainly is. Thank you, Frank, for joining me on the Sam Sorbo Show. I'll be right back after a brief break. We'll be talking about the newest threat in immigration. Have you heard this one yet? Stay tuned.
Hi there. Have you been looking for a science curriculum with a Christian worldview? Well, look no further than Light Lab. I've known Suzanne O'Shara since I created the movie Let There Be Light. And this is a science curriculum with lessons for kids to explore the nature of light and Jesus Christ, the light of the world. It's a book for kids between ages 8 and 12. It consists of 12 lessons on the nature of light with hands-on activities that are simple and engaging. The Bible studies revolve around God as the creator, his plan for mankind through Christ, and the importance of knowing his word and the Holy Spirit's role in the lives of Christians. So check it out today, Light Lab. If you enter SAM10, you'll get 10% off your purchase. So check it out now for your discount and enjoy.
And welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show here on Patriot.tv. My next guest is here to talk to us about a new immigration crisis that you perhaps haven't heard of yet. Nicholas Giordano comes to us from Campus Reform Higher Education. He's a fellow there. He's also a professor of political science. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Sam.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. I want to talk about this. This is really sort of disconcerting. It stems actually from my last conversation with Frank Gaffney. We are indoctrinating our own now to hate the United States. Is that wrong?
No, that's not wrong. At Campus Reform, we've been reporting on how colleges, campuses have become anti-American, where they push anti-American sentiment on the student body. There's a war on merit, and the idea of individual personal responsibility has been thrown out the window. Unfortunately, this has now filtered down through the K through 12 system. So when we look at the immigration numbers, we have about 400,000 unaccompanied minors that have crossed the border, many more coming in family units, and they're enrolling in our public school system. And it's a school system that is promoting anti-Americanism, that is promoting the victimhood ideology, and telling these people that have come here that we're an oppressive and hateful country. And so what? How are they going to gain any sense of loyalty to this country while they're here? So this is a national security issue. That's what it rises up to.
So how are we going to handle this with the kids that are in schools? I'm looking at my notes. You've got the New York State Board of Regents DEI framework that classifies police as that they brutally and senselessly kill blacks and brown men and women. This is being taught to young children. I have here 463,000 border encounters with unaccompanied children. These are children who basically have no sort of firm guidance at home, and they're being sent into these places where they're being taught lies.
Correct. And we're a humane nation, so we believe that if children are here, we should give them an education regardless of whether they're a citizen or an illegal immigrant. And one of the big problems, you put up the New York State Board of Regents, which I wrote about in the op-ed, is the fact that the DEI framework, which anyone could go to online, it will explain that every institution in the United States is inherently racist in some way. Now, the education system used to be the main vehicle towards assimilation, taking those that come to the United States and assimilate them into the American culture, where those people would have to adapt to American values, American political concepts like liberty and freedom. However, again, as Campus Reform, we reported that the universities began deeming this idea of assimilation and the melting pot as a microaggression, as a form of racism. And they made it as if now America must bow down to all the different cultures that are coming here. So we have a whole bunch of students that are going to go through an education system. And it's not only that they're not going to gain a love and appreciation for the United States, it's the fact that they could actually gain a hostility towards the United States. Imagine traveling all this way, thousands of miles, on a dangerous journey only to get here and be told that the place you came to is a horrible country. Now, it's not even like ordinary American students that have lived here their whole lives can defend America, because they're not being taught about America. They're not being taught about American exceptionalism. They can't even pass a basic citizenship exam. So this is a problem that rises to a level that people don't see. No other country in the world would be dumb enough to be pushing this.
Yes, and unfortunately it's here because it trickled down from our higher education institutions, right? And so now the teachers are all on board with this. Not all the teachers, I'm not making huge generalizations, but this is a serious problem. And you've got, there may be some young people who have made their way to the United States and they understand that it's a great opportunity, but there are so many who come here and maybe they're just sort of not terribly happy that they had to leave their homes. And so they come here and they're already disgruntled and they're being fed with these lies. I see here that you have the Board of Regents DEI framework explicitly describes America as an inherently racist country, that systemic racism pervades all aspects of our lives, including policing, education, healthcare, employment, housing, access to capital, and in almost every other conceivable realm. And the strange thing is, as patriots, we understand that, no, you know, not everything is equal in the United States, but the opportunities exist. And the examples of the opportunities of people rising above their circumstances are myriad. So it's unfortunate, because what they're doing is they're saddling young people with this burdensome lie of ineptitude, basically, of forced inability and victimhood. And that's a terrible thing to do to these young people. What do you suppose the answer is?
Well, you brought up two important points there. The first point is that this isn't all teachers, but the problem is that it's the State Board of Education's that are pushing this, so it's required in the public schools. So that is a major issue, because a lot of teachers actually don't like this stuff. They just want to teach their classes. So that's a big problem. The second thing is this idea that we can fight back. I mean, America is an exceptional nation. There's a reason that you don't see this problem in North Korea, right? You don't see a lot of people trying to sneak into Haiti right now. Of course not. People want to get to the United States because we are the land of opportunity. We're not an aristocracy. People came here with $10 in their pocket, and they were able to succeed and become multimillionaires. This is the one place where you can, as long as you work hard, put in the effort, become a success. And success stories are endless in the United States. What we need to do is we need to return the education system back to what it was based on. And that is a strong foundation in civics, a strong foundation in the American political philosophy, where people understand our history and what links us together as a society. We are the most unique country in the world, okay? We don't have 2,000 years of a shared history. We don't have shared cultures or traditions. The only thing that links us together is the very idea of America. And without it, I don't see how America survives. In fact, George Washington actually warned, if we don't have an assimilation process, it will destroy us sooner or later. So we need to get back to the strong civic education. We need to promote the ideas within the education system about personal responsibility. Bring back merit. Have more honors programs. Those are the things that could change. We need to get rid of the toxic DEI ideology, as we've been calling for at Campus Reform, and rid it from our education system, and teach the totality of American history, both the good and the bad. It's not about sugarcoating our history. More students know about slavery and the Trail of Tears than they do about the actual Constitution. And so let's give them a strong foundation in American civics so that they actually understand and appreciate the system our founders set up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know how practicable that is. I will say that I have a theory about why we don't teach civics in our schools. I think that it's a conflict of interest for a school that's run by a government to teach the citizenry that they actually control the government, that the power to govern resides with the citizenry and not with the government. And I think that slowly over time, we've seen the degradation of the training in our schools in civics, specifically for that reason. It's a conflict of interest for the government to teach students that way. How we're going to get that reinstilled in our schools, you know, we've made some inroads here in the great state of Florida. Governor DeSantis passed some legislation that insists that they teach civics in the schools and things like that. But it has to be farther and wider than that. I mean, Florida's not going to become its own country anytime soon. As far as I know.
No, definitely not.
So well, we need to figure out how to get this across.
I think one way to do it is to introduce accountability back into the system. I mean, unfortunately, the people took a step back. They had good faith that our education system was doing its job. And then during the COVID, they revealed, oh my God, what is my child learning? And so parents became aware. That led to parents actually showing up at school board meetings. It used to be if you had five parents show up, that would be a lot. Now the school board meetings are packed. We also need the tax dollars to follow the child. If a school is failing, the parent should have every right to pull that child from a school and send them to another school, whether it's a public school in the neighboring district that's succeeding, whether it's a private school or a charter school. It should be up to the parent to decide, and the tax dollars should follow the parent. So there are solutions. And yes, it's a difficult battle because, unfortunately, too many have abdicated their responsibility. There was a lot of conservatives that didn't get involved in the education system. They instead went into finance and law and other areas. And unfortunately, we surrendered it to ideological zealots. And that's what we see being pushed in the education system today. You spoke about how the public servants don't want students to be educated on government. Well, that's what happens when there's no accountability in the system. The public servants forget that they're there to serve the public and instead think that they're there to rule over the public. And I think we've witnessed that with many of our officials.
That's true. Yes, I tend to agree with that. Of course, I'm for homeschooling, so we're gonna differ on the money following the child. But for the time being, that seems to be the only solution that people have really come up with. My struggle is that even when the money follows the child, you still get graduates from our teaching institutions, right, who have been trained in DEI and CRT and Common Core and all of that good stuff. And they're teaching in the private schools now, and they're teaching in the Christian schools now, and they're teaching in the charter schools. And so really what the call needs to be is for parents to get more involved. Do you have resources at Campus Reform to help parents get involved? Because I know that if I were to try to get involved in my school, I would be starting from zero. I would be like, okay, I have to find out when a school board meeting is. How do I find out when a school, right? So we need to give parents resources to encourage them to get involved. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I do, and everyone could go to campusreform.org. There is information on the website and the Leadership Institute. So Campus Reform is a project of the Leadership Institute. We are holding a conference next month in April in Nashville, Tennessee, where we'll be talking about this exact thing. How do we begin to take back the education system in this country? Because parents do have a major role. Parents are the ones that are ultimately responsible for their child's education. And when officials tell you that parents shouldn't have a say, that tells you everything you need to know, whether it's the Terry McAuliffe's or the President Biden's or the Randy Weingarten's. That should tell you everything you need to know about them.
Yeah, that should tell you how involved you must be, because they're clearly trying to get away with something. Okay, so they can go to Campus Reform to get some more information on that. Your conference that's coming up, though, sounds really interesting. Is that for, like, professionals, or is it for lay people? Is it for parents?
Anyone can come and attend, and I will tell you the exact date. I believe it is April 19th and 20th in Nashville, Tennessee. So it's going to be a phenomenal conference. I'll be speaking there. Congressman Byron Daniels will be speaking there. Riley Gaines will be speaking there. Zachary Marshall will be speaking there. So it's going to be a really great event for people to understand what's going on in our education system. And one of the most important things that I believe as an educator, as someone that's in the college classroom and that's getting these students, is that we need to begin to redesign all the curriculums throughout the country to institute a pro-American agenda within our education system.
Yeah, and I think that's vital for the survival of the nation. The nation can't survive if more than half of the population, or less than half of the population, hates it and wants to see it fail. I want to thank you for coming on the program. Nicholas Giordano from Campus Reform Project, thank you so much for coming on. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. We will be right back after a quick break to talk about the deepfake porn that's out there. Have you heard of this? Be right back. Stay tuned.
Hi there. You know, for years I've been talking about how our public schools, our government schools, have been captured by progressives and their progressive ideology, and that they are teaching things that directly contradict the values of millions of Americans, our traditional American values. And that's especially true if you're a Christian family. So for those of you who are worried about the best educational path for your children, I am pleased to announce my new partnership with the Herzog Foundation. They are a trusted source on K-12 Christian education, and they have a remarkable suite of resources for parents who are thinking about making the switch from government schools to either Christian schools or homeschool. From their online publication of The Lion to their network of podcasts, like mine, the Herzog Foundation offers a wide range of advice and information for Christian parents to make the best educational decisions for their children. If you want to learn more about how your family, your faith, your community can flourish through a Christian education, you go to herzogfoundation.com. That's herzogfoundation.com. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show here on Patriot.tv. My guest next is going to talk to us about the deep fake porn on the web. Now, I will preface this by saying I looked for some images to show you guys, but we can't show them. They're AI and they're fake nudes. And this is now booming, especially among teens. And teens' lives are being ruined. It's actually not a joke. My guest, Carl Szabo, is the vice president and general counsel for NetChoice. He's also a professor of internet law at George Mason University's Scalia Law School. Welcome to the program, Carl Szabo.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to see you. So we're talking about protecting some kids online. So I read some of these stories. This young girl who found out that her friends in school had, you know, her friend had a crush on her or whatever, and he paid to have her head put onto a naked body by an AI source. The kids are being targeted with advertising for this. Can you describe some of this for us?
Yeah, it's really scary. So child sexual abuse material, shorthanded for CSAM is the acronym, child sexual abuse material, is illegal to possess today. It is illegal to possess child sexual abuse material. And so that would include naked photos of somebody under the age of 18. It is illegal to possess. Unfortunately, a lot of our existing laws do not cover that protection when it comes to what are called deepfakes or AI-generated content. Currently, the way the laws are written is it requires an actual photo, not an altered photo, of child sexual abuse material to be criminal. So what we're seeing is a lot of bad actors are getting around the law by taking images, heads of actual minors and putting them on AI-generated pornographic images and saying, well, it's not a real photo, so you can't prosecute me. So one of the things that NetChoice, my company, and I are working on is we're meeting with lawmakers across the country, including in your home state of Florida, to fill the gaps in these types of laws, to make it clear that whether the image is AI generated or real, if it involves an actual minor involved in sexual acts or nudity, it should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. We got to stop the bad actors from using the letter of the law to escape the purpose of the law.
Okay, and you see a path forward for that?
Absolutely. We're actually seeing it in states across the country, whether it's in red states like Florida or even blue states like California. Lawmakers are realizing that we need to stop these bad practices when it comes to child sexual abuse material when it's AI generated. But one of the other things that's popping up, and look, I'm a dad, I have a son and a daughter, so I worry about this all the time, is what happens when they're no longer under the age of 18? What happens when they're adults and you're seeing these kind of like AI generated revenge porn or using images of actual people in compromised positions created by artificial intelligence? So there's another piece of legislation that we are actively working on across the country. I'll actually be talking to Congress about this in a couple of days, that would enable victims to actually have redress, be able to go to court and bring action against the bad actors. And it's kind of using an invasion of privacy attempt, similar to what Hulk Hogan used against the website Gawker a couple years ago. And so that's one of the other ways. We're giving people the tools. We're giving law enforcement the tools to put criminals in prison if they have child sexual abuse material created by AI. And we're giving victims the ability to bring action against the bad actors if they use AI to create AI-generated deepfake pornography.
But I understand there are some laws that are, or proposed bills that are making their way through some state legislatures that won't actually protect. They'll actually hinder people's ability to access their own sites on the web and stuff like that. Is that true?
Yeah, it's really important. Look, as a parent, we all struggle. We all struggle with how our kids are going to use devices, how they are going to use social media, how they're going to use cell phones. And look, every parent goes through this. Every generation goes through this challenge. My parents went through it with cable TV. Before then, it was Tipper Gore complaining about rap music. You have people complaining about violent video games. You have people complaining about Elvis Presley and Ed Sullivan. And every time parents figure it out a way, kind of like how you have with homeschooling. And what we need to do is empower parents to be parents. There is no replacement for parents. Unfortunately, some in the government have decided to try and replace parents with government or with Silicon Valley. And it's even happened in states like Florida, even in states like Arkansas and Ohio, where we have seen government trying to help parents, but in doing so have actually replaced parents with government. And the laws that have been introduced would create essentially what's called ID for the internet. The underlying purpose of the law is to make sure that people under the age of 18 can't access certain parts of social media. Aside from the unconstitutional nature of that, the reality is if a website is to verify that somebody is over the age of 18, they have to do a heck of a lot of work. They have to collect a lot of sensitive personal information on all of us. So all of a sudden, as we are surfing the internet, if a state has adopted this ban on social media for anyone over the age of 18, suddenly, when you go to Instagram or Facebook, you'll have to enter in your driver's license, your social security number, your passport information. You'll have to verify that you are who you say you are and that you are over the age of 18 and prove that you actually are. So this is really troubling.
Well, the Democrats can't be for that. Democrats can't be for that because they say that Black people don't have IDs. So we can't possibly ask Black people for IDs, according to the Democrats. So how are these bills ever going to get passed?
You know, when it comes to Democrats deciding what's best for us on the internet, they have no problem doing that. You actually saw there's actually legislation right now moving in the states of Maryland and Vermont where they use the word reasonably. So websites should reasonably protect children or take reasonable precautions. Yet the word parent shows up but once. And it's to deny parents the right to track their kids on their devices. So what you're seeing is really this dichotomy where red states are trying to pass laws that still create ID for the internet, but then saying parents take over. And blue states are creating ID for the internet and saying government and social media take over. Neither of which are good because there is no substitute for parents at the end of the day. And the thing that always troubles me, especially as a parent, is every time I hear somebody saying it's too hard. Well, guess what? Being a parent is a hard job. It's the job we all sign up for. And if I don't want my kids on a device, I take away the device. If I decide it's okay for them to use a site or service, I make that decision. And at the end of the day, no government, no social media company is going to decide better than I can what is best for my family and my children. So that's kind of what we're trying to push forward. We're trying to push forward real solutions like what you do have in Florida and Virginia, which is a requirement of digital education in schools. What you are starting to see across the country, which are campaigns led by the government, as well as nonprofits to educate and empower parents on the tools that are available to them today to better control what access their kids have. But at the end of the day, it's on parents. If we want our kids to not be on their devices all the time, then we ourselves can't be on our devices all our time because our kids just want to be like us. So we need to model the change we want to see. And that's what I'm doing also with NetChoice is we're going around the country and working with parents, working with interest groups to better educate and empower parents and tell them, guess what? You don't need the government. You don't need social media. You can raise your children and don't let anyone else tell you otherwise.
I like that. I tend to push back against people who say that parenting is hard because I think that we're telling ourselves a lie and we're making it more difficult than it has to be. But I do appreciate the stance of, hey, if you don't want your kid on a device all the time, maybe get off your own device first. If you don't want your child to drink a lot, maybe don't drink a lot in front of your child. You know, that kind of advice. I think that we've lost our way when it comes to parenting and knowing how to parent in our culture. Largely as a result of the schools and the schools separating families so early and for so long a period of time, you know, so much time during the day. I would love to see some kind of movement in the schools to deter children from having devices, to deter parents from giving their children devices. We can use sort of, if the school opts for a stance on, you know, disdaining the use of devices for children, then it can go a long way. But the school administrators have to get on board. And unfortunately, they tend to be controlled by the teachers' unions. Teachers' unions tend to be communist. Communists want porn in the schools. So it's going to be hard to get TikTok or Tinder or whatever the new app is out of the schools.
Yeah, I mean, I remember growing up, if you had a pager, they'd take it away. Why can't we take away the phones in the schools? I don't see why not. It's within the purview of the government. It's within the purview of the school. But some of the pushback, and this is a little outside of what I do in my job, but what I do as a dad, I talk to my neighbors about this, and some of them say, well, I need to be able to reach my kid at all times. I need to know that they're safe. And I think a lot of the challenge for the youth, for the this generation, is a lot of parents have a lot of anxiety. They have a lot of anxiety and it's being transmuted onto their children, which makes them anxious. Look, if everyone's anxious, I'm going to say, well, maybe there's something to be anxious about. So once again, the change needs to happen with parents. Parents need to let their kids be kids. Parents need to let their kids kind of go out and explore the woods like we used to. And at the end of the day, if you hand your kid a device, don't be surprised if they use it. So one simple solution for all parents out there, if you don't want your kids on devices late at night, take them away. Keep them in the kitchen. Keep them in the bedroom. Just take them out of the hands of the kids.
Right. Carl Szabo, thank you so much for coming on the program. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. We'll be right back after a quick break. My son is up next, and we're going to talk about the struggle that young men have today. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hi there, Sam Sorbo here. You've heard me say when you give your child a phone, you're not giving them access to the internet. You're giving the internet access to them. But there's a way that you can mitigate for the dangers that that implies. And that is with the Canopy app. I've talked to the people at this company and they have your child's best interests at heart. They screen images that come through on the phone and they blur out the sections that you don't want your kid to see. They actually can in real time prevent sexting and other things that happen with phones. And so I would encourage you to take a look at Canopy and use the code SAM at checkout for a special discount. Go over to canopy.com and then get back to me and tell me how much you love it. Thanks so much. Bye.
Feminine guy doesn't mean he's not dominant. I disagree with that. I think that a lot of feminine guys are dominant, just not in the way that I want them to.
What are some of those ways?
I mean, I'm in therapy, so I attract toxic, and I kind of like toxic. So, like, I mean, I'm not the best person to ask, but... Oh my god, this is going on the internet, but I mean, like, a guy that's, like, low-key, like, bullying you and a little bit degrading you, I'm like, sure, why not? If a guy is too nice, I'm like, no, you're weak, I'm sorry. But that's just my personal opinion. Like, I'm intense, so for me, a guy that's really nice, not that he's weak, but I have learned over the last 4 years that a lot of the nice guys can't handle a strong personality.
All right, welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. So this is a young woman who is just being interviewed on the street. There are plenty of these videos surfacing now. My son keeps coming and showing them to me, complaining about the small pool of a choice in women that he had in the world. This is a struggle for young men. And so we had this conversation this morning at the breakfast table. And because Patriot.tv is pro-family, I thought I'd bring him back on to share some of your insights into what's going on and what are young men going to do?
A little better dressed this time, too.
Yeah.
Well, for starters, young men should not be feminine because that causes toxicity, right? I mean, you embrace the feminine traits and you become, like, as a man, it makes you manipulative, it makes you a liar, like, and those are feminine traits that women should have, but men should not have, right? And so the girl even said in the video, she attracts toxic. Obviously, that's what she's going to get. She's going to get men who are feminine, who don't know how to voice what they're actually feeling, who don't know how to lead in a relationship. And so when she comes along and she is more masculine than them in any way, shape, or form, they're going to be threatened by it. And the only way that they're going to know how to counter it is to belittle her and diminish her and demean her, because that's what they've been taught. And so those types of women are so common on the internet. And that's why I have on my YouTube show, The BS with Braden Sorbo, I have clip after clip after clip of these young women who are complaining about men. There was a video I saw just today talking about, if he is a 10, but he's shorter than you, he's an instant one. And everything is based on someone's physical appearance and what they bring to the table financially, rather than their actual personality, rather than their aspects. And I get that some people may lack with status, height, money, whatever, but at the core, there are good people who are just pushed to the side and brushed into this category of undateable simply because of an immediate factor.
It sounds like people are very superficial and they like being superficial.
Yeah, the biggest problem that I've noticed is women, when looking for men to date, tend to view, how can he serve me? Whereas a lot of guys my age are going, I just want someone, you know, that I can be happy with. And so for men, we're seeing this kind of uptick of guys looking for a partner, someone to help, you know, that they can help, that will help them, that will go back and forth. And women are looking for someone to pay their rent. And so a lot of guys are just being turned off to it altogether, which also isn't the right answer to the problem. Guys should not just give up on dating as a whole.
Do you think this is a result of feminism in some way?
Oh, without a doubt. It's a result of feminism and the sexual revolution itself. You see, before birth control was invented in the early 1900s, the social stigmatism around having children outside of wedlock was so great that women were held accountable by not wanting to have kids outside of marriage. And men were held accountable by women not wanting to have kids outside of marriage. A man doesn't have a barrier to entry when it comes to sex.
They weren't held accountable. They were held to a standard mm-hmm. that they had to fulfill. They were held to a bar that they had to fulfill. They had to put a ring on it.
Yes.
They had to set a date.
The woman's bar is, you need to put a ring on it. You need to set a date. You need to provide for me and you need to give me security and stability.
Right.
A man's bar is please. Like, he doesn't have a bar. And so women had the bar of, you need to do all these things
right
before I risk having a kid with you.
Right.
Because you're risking having a kid. That's the product of sex. I always say, don't have sex with people unless you're comfortable raising kids with them, because that's the outcome. I can't drop a TV and get mad if it screen cracks. I did that. What did I think was going to happen? You know, and then so birth control became invented.
So you're blaming women is what
happened. Yeah, that's what I'm doing. No, I'm blaming the people that invented birth control because they tricked women into thinking that sexual liberation was a good thing, when in reality it ruined their ability to bond with someone and it completely destroyed this entire system of courting and dating. You don't have to do any of that anymore. You can go on
as
an app.
As a man.
Yeah, as a guy. You can go on an app on your phone and without any effort, you can text a girl, hey, come over, and she'll just come over. There's no effort on either side anymore in the dating sphere.
The girl that we saw in the video is somebody who would come right over.
Probably without a doubt. I wouldn't invite her. She's not my type. But without a doubt, that's exactly what would happen. You get on your phone and there's no requirement of meeting a family or spending time getting to know someone.
What's the upshot for young men who don't recognize that this is not a good scenario? For young men who would call that girl and say, you know what, sure, I'll spend the night with her. Let's see if I can get her to come over. What's the upshot for those young men?
Mentally, there really isn't. So it affects men and women differently. For women, it hurts the ability to bond with a partner over a lifetime. And for men, it affects the ability to feel love in any way, shape, or form.
You're saying free sex and
free sex as a whole has different
pornography.
Yes.
Yeah.
As a whole, it will destroy each of the genders just with different kind of outcomes.
Different mechanics.
And so it ruins both in a different aspect. Women lose the ability to bond. Men lose the ability to feel that bond.
But they also lose their drive.
Their drive is just completely diminished. And that's
they have no purpose.
There's no purpose.
Because the purpose of making money is not a purpose.
No, men better themselves so that they could become appealing to women.
Right.
Right? That's why guys
do anything. And be a great dad,
like
have kids that look up to them mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Well, as a guy, right, I want to find a wife, which means I need to get a good job. I need to be physically capable to carry my children. I need to be, you know, strong as a dad mentally. I need to be able to lead my family in devotions and Bible time. I need to have all of these check boxes for myself, because there really aren't any women left in the world. There are, but very few and far in between,
right,
in terms of people who are left in the world who will also hold me to that standard. So for the meantime, I sit here and I go, okay, I'm going to work on this standard until the right person comes
along.
But
it's easier to not...
It's easier to sit at home, vape, smoke weed, not go to the gym, have, you know,
watch porn,
curly broccoli hair, watch porn, and then still get girls, because girls are willing to give themselves away because they're told to do this because it feels good.
At a certain point, porn ruins women, ruins sex.
We're already seeing it with AI girlfriends. I mean, there's already apps that are creating basically fake girlfriends, like in Blade Runner 2048 or 9, 24, the Ryan Gosling movie, where the AI girlfriend is like, you look lonely, I can fix that. That's becoming an actual thing. People are dating AI characters. And honestly, to a certain extent, I don't blame them, because those they won't have problems with. Like, the AI girlfriend's not going to argue back or have her own voice. And if you're going to be weak and you don't want to have any confrontation or any growth in a relationship, perfect. Go with something that isn't going to give you any sort of give or take. You won't get anything out of it,
but
you
no also won't risk
it. Yeah, exactly. No fulfillment, you won't get anything out of it, but you're also not risking yourself getting hurt.
Fair enough.
Right? If I go out and I approach a girl, people like to say the worst that she could say is no. She could laugh in my face. Her friends could make a joke right in front of them. There's far worse, technically, than a girl can say that would deter me from wanting to go up and talk to them. And you see these videos of girls acting like this online, and you go, they're willing to say that in front of a camera. What are they willing to say behind a camera? I don't even know if I want to approach someone anymore, because the fact that they're that bold and they're saying those weird things, like, I attract toxic, why would I want to go up to you? If your type is toxic and you like me, what does that say about me as a guy? Am I toxic, or did you finally just change your mind?
No, you're toxic.
Exactly. And so these guys get into this mindset of seeing these social media posts, and granted, they are viral clips. They went viral for a reason. They're outlandish and ridiculous. But that means other girls are seeing them and also being influenced by them.
Yeah, they're representative.
Like Anaconda came out by Nicki Minaj, and all these girls started twerking to the video because Nicki Minaj did it, therefore it's okay. So if enough clips of girls acting crazy goes viral for a certain reason, they'll do it. Like we talked about this morning, guys are given two paths down life as they grow up. The one path, which is following God and Christianity, leads to all these different branches, physical fit, mental health, all these different things. Or the other one is just secularism, which eventually leads to your own destruction. Because without a meaning in life, you slowly erode whatever core you have to nothingness.
That's the Bible doing that. That's not what I did. Just read the Bible. It's all in there. It's crazy. Yeah. So what's your advice to young men who are still kind of like, you know, the easy path looks kind of tempting. It's easy. The hard path, and this is, you know, Jordan Peterson talks about this, right? Mm-hmm. Your purpose in life is to pick up the heaviest rock that you can possibly pick up, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what you're advocating for. Go find the heaviest rock. Make something of yourself. Make yourself worthy of a woman who doesn't deserve you.
Yes, you should be trying to make yourself better, because in your mind, you should almost be thinking, man, she's too good for me, right? Like, I could take an easy path. I know that there are people that I could text, that I could go down the easy path with, and I've told them straight up to their face. Like, I'm not claiming to be perfect, this beacon of, yeah, I'm right on the right track. I'm doing everything perfectly. I've made plenty of mistakes. But you have to be willing to afford yourself grace, right? Because if God can perform a miracle in someone else, he can perform a miracle in you. That's far be it from me to judge myself or someone else based on, you know, something that has happened in the past rather than what they're doing in the present.
Right.
Right. I like to say your past is your past unless it's with you, in which case it's your present.
Unless you're bringing it with you.
You are who you surround yourself with. You are what you attract. And so if you are attracting negativity and bad people, there's a chance you need to reevaluate what you're doing. Because I can't sit here and go, I want a traditional Christian girlfriend who will then become my wife. And then God goes, all right, cool. Here's a pamphlet. Here's how you become a traditional Christian male so that you get that. I go, no, I don't want that. I just want the girlfriend.
Right.
You can't do that. And so I've actually had to text people, hey, you're really cool. I am going to cut off my connection with you because it's not furthering any relationship that I have that's going to be prosperous.
Well, they're walking down one path.
They're going down another
path. And
you're
not
going
to join them on that path.
Exactly. It's nothing against the person. It's like, hey, if you want to turn around and come back on this path, I'm happy to point you in the right direction, send you with some good people and all this stuff. But for my own sake, avoiding that temptation, seeing what you post online, knowing what you do in real life, like how you act, those are things that I want to limit to as minimal as they can possibly be so that I don't even put myself in the, like, you can, if you are Christian, right, and you want to go to a club with your girlfriend, you're like, well, I know I'm with her, so it's totally safe. I'm strong in my faith, even if I'm around. Why would you put yourself around it, though? There's zero reason for you to engage in that and to go around that area, right?
It's all behavioral.
It is. Jesus hung out with prostitutes. He hung out with sinners and tax collectors, but they came to him. They were with him. He didn't go into a strip club and sit down and go, okay, Cinnamon, let's talk about your relationship with your father. That's not what Jesus did. That's not how he acted.
Okay, where can people find you? Because you do videos about this stuff for young
every
men
day.
Specifically.
For young people as a whole.
Are you putting it on TikTok too?
I am. On TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Braden Sorbo.
I don't advocate anybody going to TikTok.
No, it's going to get banned soon too. It's up for another ban.
He built a following of over 2 million followers on TikTok by telling jokes because he's sometimes funny.
Nice.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll be back here same bat time, same bat channel, patriot.tv tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'm Sam Sorbo. This is The Sam Sorbo Show.
Views and opinions expressed in The Sam Sorbo Show are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views and positions of the Herzog Foundation.